Hello.
Hi.
It's Heather.
Yeah.
How are you?
So who are you and what are you doing?
Who am I and what am I doing?
Yes.
Well, it's, I do a program for the gay and lesbian community on CITR in Vancouver, which is a radio show.
Oh.
And, yeah, like I was reading the book Lesbian Nuns and I wanted to interview some of the people in it. And I,
How'd you find my number?
Well, because you mentioned in the book that you work for Community Yellow Pages.
Oh, I don't say work, I own it, but
yeah. Oh, okay, yeah,
so
well,
how
I...
how clever you were.
I'd gotten in touch with the publisher, and they were sort of trying to help me track down the authors, which is how I usually track down people in books, and in this particular case, Werner Books weren't being all that cooperative, so I just thought that in the meantime, I'd try and track down some of the people who were brave enough to drop hints as to where they were, and it was wonderful to find you, because it's like a 9-year-old book now.
Yes.
And so it was great to be able to track you down.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to a gay and lesbian audience.
Yes, it is.
Okay, that's mostly why I asked, so I'd know who I was talking to.
Yeah, it's definitely, and I guess, you know, whoever else happens to be listening.
Right, but I mean, I do a lot of straight stuff, too, so... But we're talking to mostly gay and lesbian audience.
Yeah, it's definitely targeted that way.
But in Canada?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Vancouver.
I have a very good friend who I understand is might be a lesbian hero up there.
Who's that?
She's Canadian. It's not Katie Lang. It's Robin Tyler.
Where would I know her
she's
from?
She's from Winnipeg. Well, she's done the been the producer of the last 3 national gay marches in Washington. And she does the women's music and comedy festival in Yosemite every year.
Hmm.
Anyway, she might be, and she's very, very interesting and controversial. So if you want to do, you know, a Daughter of Canada sometime.
Sure.
She's extremely well known in this country.
Robin Tyler. The name rings a bell, but it's just one of those things where I couldn't place it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I would give you her phone number anyway at the end of the interview. If
sure,
you'd like.
That would be super. I'm always looking for fascinating people to talk to.
She's from Winnipeg. Yeah, she's quite interesting to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
On many counts.
Excellent. So have you done a lot of interviews about the convent since you...
Well, I've done a lot of interviews about a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
Because my main background in the gay movement is in journalism and publishing and gay civil rights. So I've been an activist. I've been very much in the forefront of the American gay and lesbian movement since 1970.
So I guess the question is then, when you were growing up, like what drove you to the what made you want to get into what drove you to the convent? What made you want to get into religious life?
Are we taping?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Well, the answer is very simple, actually. I grew up in a strong Catholic family, and it was the love of God that drove me into the convent. And my mother has a very personal faith in God and Jesus and Mary. And I think that it probably helped being a lesbian, because then the alternatives of marriage to a man didn't seem very attractive on a subconscious level, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But it was much more the positive. That's kind of a negative in a way, because it's a zero motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And I really went into the convent because I was very much in love with God. And I wanted, and also I had a real strong social consciousness. I wanted to be in the service of God. But I, when I left the convent, I went into social work. So that was not just a religious motivation.
So when you were growing up, were you aware of your lesbian feelings, or?
Not consciously. I grew up in this tiny little town in Southern California that had orange groves in it, back when California had orange groves, and you know, instead of suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't aware. I never heard the word homosexual till after my first orgasm with a woman. So I was very naive, and that did not overtly influence me.
Mm-hmm.
No.
So, when you got into the convent, you get this impression that everybody's sort of very naive and unsexual. Is that what it's really like? Or?
Well, keep in mind, I went into the convent in 66, which was kind of the heyday of the hippie, peace, love, and brown rice, you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll era.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the women I encountered, and I also entered a very liberal convent, extraordinarily liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And the women I encountered were very naive, yes, as I was. Most of my postulant mates, and the first year is called postulancy,
mm-hmm.
Were as naive as I was. I later found out there were, out of my class of 19, probably six that I know of that became lesbians, and the others I don't know.
I was just going to ask you, when you look back on it, do you think, you know, a lot of these women were there for the partially the same reason you were, which is...
Well, some of them went in because they wanted to do service, and you know, a convent is a good place to, you know, devote your life to service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the same reason some women choose nursing, you know, the taking care of others thing, for better and for worse.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say everybody, like my friend Jean O'Leary, went into the convent with, she says, very little motivation about God. She went in more overtly because she was thought she could, you know, hang out with women. And see, that's a kind of subconscious. You realize, without labeling it lesbianism, that you're going into a society of women.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a society of women who love God, of course. But that certainly has an attraction, especially back then, for women whose alternative was sort of more or less still to marry a man soon after college or before college.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nowadays, like my younger sisters, I have six of them, can easily wait till 30 or 35 and, you know, have their careers, buy a house, you know, do whatever, and maybe get married at 30 or 35, or not.
Mm-hmm.
But in the 60s, even late 60s, that was less an alternative.
Mm-hmm. So now, at what point did you decide the convent wasn't for you? What sort of, was it what you thought it would be to begin with? And
well, sort of not, but I think it was more, see, I have a book out called Kicking the Habit,
mm-hmm.
in which...
That's a good title.
Thank you. My story that's in Lesbian Nuns is written as a whole novel. And so it goes into much more detail. And I think what happened is that I didn't know it at the time, of course, but I entered the convent in a very political era, in a very political order, the Immaculate Heart Nuns.
Mm-hmm.
Who had Sister Carita, and I mean, up at my novitiate, the Berrigans, you know, Daniel and Philip Berrigan, and all the anti-war priests, and were lecturing and visiting and staying. I mean, it was like an anti-war convention at the novitiate, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, the classes we took were from the most liberal of priests and theologians. So I guess what I didn't expect is I didn't really intend to enter an order. That was, see, when I went in, I expected, you know, that we'd have the mass in Latin and that we'd wear habits and that we'd live behind the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I got in, they said, oh, we're not going to wear the habit anymore. We're not going to have the Latin mass. And we want you all in the ghettos to work with God's people. So I was very surprised at these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Catholic Church took a big shift in the late 60s.
Mm-hmm. So it's, in actual fact, you had wanted it to be more conservative.
I don't even know if I would wanted it, because had I joined the more conservative order, the Carmelites that I had thought about, I might have left anyway or sooner or for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly would have come out as a lesbian if I hadn't been dead. I would have come out as a lesbian.
Did you know you were gay by the time you left the convent?
Not exactly. Right after I sort of officially left, I had no place to go except back to my family's home, which I didn't want to. So a mother superior of another convent invited me to come over and live in the convent if I would teach school. for the fifth graders. I said, oh, sure, that sounds like a better alternative than going back to West Covina. At least I could stay in Los Angeles and have and not have my parents hanging around. So I was not there but 2 weeks when I met, you know, one of Mother Superior's friends and went to bed with her. And my first sexual experience was in the convent, yes. So I was kind of technically just out, but not out at all, because I was living there. In fact, the woman I met had called one evening for Sister Peter Damien, and I had taken the call because Peter Damien was out somewhere. So anyway, the conversation lasted 2.5 hours. As you know, and by it was funny because after the first hour, I said, I think this woman is flirting with me. And I was shocked, you know, like I was 18. And despite my escapades in high school, which I certainly would have known were lesbian had I been raised in a public school. I mean, you know, holding hands and wanting to be with girls all the time and being totally crushed when they didn't want to speak to me for a week. And, you know, every sign in the world was there, but we just didn't use the terms. So when Connie called that night and, you know, and we were talking, I was quite shocked. And I think I talk about this episode in my story in Lesbian Nuns. And, you know, the conversation went on and on and on. She wanted to know everything about me, you know, how my mouth looked and how my eyes looked and my entire autobiography. And so, and this was a lay friend that was calling for her friend, the Mother Superior of our convent, who was only about 35, so she was young and sprightly, Mother Superior.
Now, was the coming out process really difficult for you, having been raised Catholic? Because did you go through a whole sort of tumultuous phase where, oh my God, I'm going to hell? And
no.
No?
No, I didn't. The coming out experience was one of the easiest and best and wonderful things and shortest things that ever happened.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't go through any of that guilt thing because, you see, I had left the convent because I had sort of lost my faith. I had just ceased to believe in the Catholic Church, which was kind of fortunate. And then about 2 weeks after I'd really given up on it completely, I fell into bed. So the timing, you know, and both proceeded at the same time. I was having closer and closer bondings with women and, you know, being caught in chapel and everything but the ability to call myself a lesbian because I didn't know what it was called had happened. And then I lost my faith. And directly thereafter, I went to bed with a woman. And at, right after my first orgasm, I said, oh, I know what this is called. And I was thrilled.
So now, when you look back at your Catholic, your early life in the Catholic Church, so do you feel that you were brainwashed early in life to follow a certain...
Well, no more or less than any... body from a strong religious background, whether it be fundamentalist or Lutheran or Calvin. You know, when your brain is empty and you're 3 years old, you're going to believe more or less the first thing somebody sticks in front of you. And you could call it brainwashing, but, you know, you go to first grade and they brainwash you into the ABCs and the discipline and maturity in society. So... I don't think much more than those forms of brainwashing, which are our society's way of saying, you know, believe in this, believe in that.
Do you hold a grudge against the Catholic Church?
No. No. My mother asked me recently why I wasn't a Catholic. And I said, and I told, oh, if I was not a Catholic because I was a lesbian. And I said, no, Mom, that's not the reason. If I was straight, I wouldn't be a Catholic either. And she said, why? Because she was quite shocked. I think a lot of people assume, you know, maybe gays and lesbians aren't this faith or that faith because of their gayness. And I said, no, I'm not a Catholic because I think it's a death-oriented religion.
In what way?
Well, many ways. One of the principles of Catholicism is suffering now. To score, you know, to do your penance here and score a higher place next to God in heaven. they are much more oriented towards death, because the real life to a Catholic takes place after you die. This is just a nuisance. This is just penance. You're not really even supposed to be happy on earth, because if you're happy, you're either eating too much, you're some kind of pagan, you're having sex too much. You know, too much happiness on earth represents a sinner in traditional Catholicism. So the orientation is towards death and then life everlasting.
Hmm. So from your perspective...
Am I talking to a Catholic?
No, you're not.
Okay.
No, not at all.
But I'm not bitter about it. I think, you know, many people, or most people, need or want to believe in something. You know, even the atheists and the socialists believe in Lenin or Trotsky. So, you know, I don't think it's a very healthy form of belief, but on the other hand, some people do okay by it.
See, what I find most fascinating is that you don't hold a grudge. And I'm curious, as somebody who used to be in the convent and involved in the Catholic Church, just sort of how you feel now as a gay rights activist about having to fight the religious right in a lot of ways.
Well, that, yes. I'm much more angry about that. And I have a brother who's a fundamentalist. In the last 5 years, I'm far more angry at the fundamentalists. The Catholics, the hierarchy makes pronouncements. But the Catholics don't get much more engaged, at least Catholics I know or my family, in anti-gay propaganda. The church every 6 months will put out another papal bull, you know, saying homosexuality is wrong and abortion's still wrong and so is sex, by the way. But they don't take nearly as active a role as the ministers of the fundamentalist churches, that we all know have taken an extremely strong role. So I'm politically angry at the Catholic Church, you know, and as a humanitarian, you know, I'm also half Latin and half Irish, but I think what they did in South America under the Spanish Inquisition and to the Jews, that's another reason I call it a death-oriented religion. I mean, the Catholic Church has killed a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think whenever people fanatically believe in a God, I mean, look at the Middle East, that's the perfect ticket, the perfect excuse to kill people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not any more mad at the Catholicism as I am at religious fanaticism. And I pity the people who, I mean, even my own mother, she's just absolutely upset that, you know, 8 or 10 of her 12 children are not Catholics. And she's most upset because she thinks we're all going to burn in hell forever. And she's going to have to watch it, I guess, from heaven, you know?
Yeah.
Which could be mortifying for a mother. And if she really believes this, I mean, it was her sacred duty to bring her kids up as Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
And she has failed. And this is very upsetting to her.
Well, and what about from a feminist standpoint, which I imagine you are?
Mm-hmm.
You know, looking at your mother and looking at women in the convent, do you ever want to run into the convent sometimes and tell all these women, like, you know, come on, there's like a better way?
Well, actually, the convent is very good for feminism.
In what way?
I don't think religious zealotry is good for feminism, or I don't think Christianity is good for feminism. But oddly enough, the convents are breeding grounds of feminists. For reasons, you know, you could kind of put together. One, you don't have men, so women aren't gearing their lives, their bodies, their dress, their style, their careers around men. So that's a big 50%. You know, that's just out the picture, out the door.
Mm-hmm.
Two, women are constantly hanging around with each other, having that same kind of experience of women in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a woman's natural feminism comes out in a convent far more than it could do if, you know, the patriarchy has put each woman in a house with a man. And that's the colonization of women. But the convents recolonize women and laying the religious bit aside. And, you know, after you've been a nun for 5 or 10 years, sometimes you don't take it all that seriously, just like anything else, the God part. So I saw a great deal of feminism bred in convents, especially the more liberal orders. And you see that in the Catholic Church even, just like a lot of the priesthoods breed homosexuality. and a different look at what it means to be a man, the more enlightened seminaries. So I'm not so sure the convent is bad for feminism if they don't have a fanatical religious belief.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, see, I think the American Catholic Church is quite different than the South American or even the European. Well, the European Catholic Church is pretty enlightened if you get out of Italy. But you'd be surprised at all the feminism and sisterhood. You know, they call it the sisterhood, the convent.
And, good name for it.
Yeah, and when I got out of the convent and went shortly thereafter to the women's movement, and they used the same word,
mm-hmm.
I knew what it meant more so than a lot of straight women coming into the women's movement, because I had lived in the sisterhood. And, you know, I was not surprised. There's a lot of sisterhood fostered in the convent.
That's completely interesting.
Yeah.